Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. If you love a good mystery or a puzzle, perhaps you also love a good mystery or puzzle that can't ultimately be solved, at least not yet. The January-February issue of South Dakota Magazine features a host of those burning questions. John Andrews is managing editor of the magazine. He's with me now in the studios in Vermilion. Hey, John.
Hey, how's it going?
Welcome back.
Good to be back.
All right, this is a fun one. This is just a plain fun. And people are going to be emailing and texting as soon as we start talking with the solutions to these puzzles.
People have emailed and texted since they got the magazine in their mailboxes with tips and leads for me to hunt down. So and maybe we can talk about a few of those.
All right.
We'll see.
All right. So the basic premise of this and the idea behind South Dakota's enduring mysteries, where did the idea come from?
Well, this is kind of one of those stories that you don't even realize that you're sort of subconsciously working on. I was thinking about this after we put this together. You know, I've been writing for the magazine now for about 10 years. And all of a sudden, just one day this summer, all these little nagging sort of questions and stuff kept popping up in my head. I guess the real trigger point was about 5 years ago. We did this book called South Dakota Outlaws, which is just that. We did, you know, chapters on some of our more nefarious characters in our history. And one of the chapters that I wrote was on Jack McCall, who shot and killed Wild Bill Hickok. For those who are unfamiliar, shot and killed Wild Bill Hickok in Deadwood in August of 1876, and then was hanged for the crime in Yankton. And so we did that book. I did that chapter. Was really kind of an eye-opening experience for me because I found a lot of things that I had never really discovered about Jack McCall. Sort of kind of developed this weird closeness to him because now I'm in Yankton. You know, I'm working in a historic building that was there at the time that all this was going on. You know, McCall was tried and jailed just down the street from where we work. His execution was just a couple blocks from where I live now. And so it just kind of a weird sort of unexpected closeness to the subject when I was working on it. So then after the book comes out, it's maybe within a year or so, one of our local historians comes in and he says to me, you know that chapter, you know that thing you wrote about Jack McCall? I said, yeah. Did you like it? I said, yeah, but you know that picture that you've got of Jack McCall in there? I said, yeah. He said, that's not Jack McCall. I said, what are you talking about?
And this where is the were
picture.
You?
Yeah, this is the picture that everyone assumes to be Jack McCall. And we've assumed that, you know, for decades and decades. And he went on to talk about how, you know, physical descriptions of McCall at the time and his age and all these different attributes just don't match up with this photo that we have printed in the magazine to open up this.
You can see.
This. Yeah, exactly. And so I just kind of stuck in my head for a while. And then this summer, we started talking about maybe doing this story on enduring mysteries. And I brought this up. I said, you know, someone had suggested that maybe this wasn't Jack McCall. So, I mean, is there any way that we can ever truly know that? Is there any way that we can ever truly know the answers to several other questions that we sort of stumbled upon? And this was totally weird. After I started working on this, I got another call from a historian out in the Black Hills who said, you know, I don't think that photo was Jack McCall either. So I said, okay, I think we're onto something here with this mystery. So from that point, we just sort of dived in. We combed through our archives. You know, we've written stories on a lot of these things in the past. So you sort of go back through and dig out these questions that we've been able to raise and not yet totally solve. And that's where Enduring Mysteries has come from.
Is there no photo of Jack McCall? I'm going to be stuck on that.
Well, there's this photo.
This photo that
But we don't know if it's Jack McCall or not, right? So that's the only one that I have ever seen of the person purporting to be Jack McCall. It's the only one that I think has ever been published in relation to the story. So whether or not there actually is a photo, a lot of his backstory is kind of murky. You know, I think he was from Kentucky, and there's some questions as to who his family members were. And so who knows? Yeah.
Interesting. All right, where do you want to start in here? Let's grab. There's several in here. What do you want to grab first?
Okay, so one that came from a story that I did recently would be the story of the Custer graves.
Okay,
which is over in the Bonham Cemetery. So Custer and his men were coming through Southern Dakota Territory in the spring of 1873. They're on their way to Fort Rice up in northern Dakota. And they get waylaid by this springtime blizzard. So they're camped out about a mile west of Yankton. Today, it's kind of the campsite, I think, is kind of like where Simples is, where the stockyards would be, sort of along Highway 50. Back then, that was a mile east of town, okay. Right? So their campground was set up out there. This big blizzard comes in, and they end up being stuck in Yankton for like a month. So the city stages this big ball, and they treat them really well. And finally, the snow melts enough that they can get out on the road. And once they get west of town a little bit, they come upon a bunch of these creeks had been flooded by all this snow melt that was happening. And so they camp out sort of in the western part of Bonham County now. And they're waiting for this detachment to go forward and build a bridge across one of the creeks so they can get over it. And while they're there, the story goes that six of Custer's men contracted some sort of illness and died. So they were apparently buried on the spot, and the troop continued along on its way. Well, at some point, the bodies were disinterred and moved to the Bonham Cemetery, where they have been since 1873. If you go there now, you can see we have this little photo of it here, and there's a bigger photo in the larger story that I did earlier. But there's a tombstone there. It says, in memory of six unknown soldiers buried here, and then there are six little American flags on each side. And it's long been assumed that these are Custer's men. Well, in the course of doing the research for my original story, I contacted members of the 7th Cavalry. There's a 7th Cavalry historian or whatever that I reached out to via email to see if we could, because the whole point was to try to figure out who these guys are. I mean, at some point you figure that there will be some sort of mention of these soldiers dying and but according to regimental records, no one died in May of 1873. And so apparently, and I'm not the first one to try to track this down, there was a historian, a woman who grew up in Bonham County and went on to be a professor of history. And in her retirement years, she did a lot of research in trying to uncover who these unknown soldiers were. And she sort of hit the brick wall, kind of like I did. Of course, she got into a lot deeper, I think, than I would have. But, she didn't get anywhere either. But so you can go over there and you can visit the gravesite. And I visited with one of the gentlemen who is a caretaker of the cemetery, and he's actually, I think, a great grandnephew of a woman named Bridget Cogan, who ran a boarding house over there, which is where Custer stayed when he was coming through the area. And so he, of course, is invested in it too, and he wants to find out as badly as anyone else, or conclusively prove as badly as anyone else, what they've got over there. And they just haven't been able to get very far on it. So.
Right. It seems like what would need to happen next would be pretty extreme.
Yeah, you'd probably have to go dig around in Washington or something for a while.
Yeah, it's going to take some real effort.
Get really into the cobwebbed archives somewhere in the bowels of the Library of Congress or something. And who knows, even at that point, it might turn out to be nothing. So.
Interesting.
But if someone wants to take it and run with it, they can do that.
They can come and bring you the story.
Yeah, exactly.
And they'll publish it.
They can write us a letter to the editor. That's perfect, right?
Exactly. All right. What's next? So much in here. Who do you think?
Okay, let's see. Yeah, we've got... Okay, we can talk about...
If you're just tuning in, John Andrews is my guest, editor of South Dakota Magazine. This is the January-February issue.
We can talk about this one,
Harvey Dunn
and The Prairie Is My Garden, because this is going to lead to a follow-up story.
Okay. And many phone calls, probably.
This is, yes, phone calls and emails galore. So this also goes back to another story that I did many years ago. We thought it would be fun to pick the brain of some art experts in South Dakota and sort of compile this list of the 10 paintings that everyone in South Dakota should see, paintings that are really important to South Dakotans. And, of course, The Prairie Is My Garden by Harvey Dunn was one of those. And in the course of doing the story, I contacted the South Dakota Art Museum up in Brookings, which is where the original Prairie Is My Garden is on display. And I asked them, you know, what sort of information they had about the painting. Who's in it? Where it's at? Of course, no one at the time really seemed to know for sure. Lots of people, you know, have claimed that they know who it is, but it's never been conclusively proven. And so we went with, in the article saying, you know, Dunn was an illustrator. This is a quote from Lynn Verscher up there at the Art Museum. He drew people all the time with just generic faces. Hmm. So after the magazine has come out, we've gotten several notes of places and people that it might be. And without giving too much away, I think we may have the location. Ah. We may have the location salted away pretty well. And we may even have the people. So
really?
That's something to look for in a coming issue of the magazine.
Oh, that's
we're in the
exciting.
Process of hunting that down right now.
Interesting.
So, yes, exactly.
All right. What else have you got? Has been particularly popular with people reaching out and saying that they had ideas.
That really has been the lightning rod, I guess. Yeah, at this point, nobody knows who put the rocks in the holes in the rocks up in northeastern South Dakota. Nobody knows for sure if Jesse James jumped Devil's Gulch, although there are people with passionate opinions that he did, or there's no possible way he could have. So,
right. And the idea there is that it's changed.
Yeah, it could be that, you know, some
the
portions
geology of it has changed.
Yeah, the geology, yeah. I mean,
or horses have changed.
yeah, horses have gotten slower and they can't jump as far as they did.
Was a legend. I mean,
exactly. And I went, you know,
growing up, when people said stuff, I mean, it was always sort of expressed as the legend has it.
Right. And one of the first big features that I ever did for the magazine was a town story on Garrettson. And so I went up there, this is probably 10 years ago or so now, and I met with a gentleman who sort of ran the, there's a little visitor's cabin at the site of the gulch. And he had this photo that he always liked to show people about how much narrower he thought the gulch was in 1876, because some rocks maybe had fallen away from the place where Jesse is alleged to have jumped. And of course, there are also stories about how Jesse James hid out in a cavern, you know, up around Split Rock Creek. And even down around Yankton, there are stories about Jesse James hiding out in the woods on the Nebraska side of the Missouri River. There are people over there who I think claim lineage to the James clan, but that's in Nebraska, so I don't go over there.
Being for South Nebraska Dakota magazine.
That's
yeah.
right. That's right. I stay on my side of the river.
Nobody has a magazine quite like this. Does Nebraska have a state magazine?
Yes, Nebraska
does
have a state magazine.
I apologies again to the fine folks in Nebraska and the
lovely
magazine.
They publish it out of Norfolk, Nebraska.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, the person who publishes Nebraska, it's called Nebraska Life, has also launched magazines in Colorado, and there's a brand new one in Utah that is coming out. I think the first issue is going to be their March-April issue. So yes, there are some similar magazines out there.
Well, I prefer ours the best because this is from where I'm from. All right, we won't have much time left. So other things in here, the Thone Stone, is that how you pronounce that?
The Thone Stone?
Thone Stone?
Yeah, so this is supposed to, if you go to out to Spearfish.
15 seconds.
Okay, the Thone Stone is supposed to be proof of European explorers in the Black Hills about 40 years before the actual gold rush.
Okay.
There's a little bit of question because the people who discovered this Thone Stone were also stone cutters, so who knows if maybe they scribbled the message in or maybe it's authentic.
We don't know.
It's
maybe you know. Send us an email inthemoment@sdpb.org. Reach out to the fine folks in South Dakota Magazine. Johnny Andrews, thank you so much. It is always a delight to have you. Another great issue of the magazine.
Thank you very much.